Good evening. Here is the news for parrots.
Welcome back. We are on episode 37 of Chat with a Cat. This is coming to you right after games one and two of the conference finals in the 89-90 season. That means we're one day removed from our look yesterday through the Eastern Conference teams, and that means it's time to go through the Western Conference teams. Not a whole lot to comment about in the conference finals, other than it looks very strongly like we're headed for a finals rematch of last year's matchup between the Spurs and the Bucks. And so with that out of the way, just to kind of place this temporally in context, we're going to go ahead and we're going to jump in to take a look at what's going on with teams in the West. We'll start at the bottom of the barrel and work our way toward the top, and we're going to start with the Warriors. So last season, the Warriors tanked mightily going after Sean Kemp. It worked. They got Kemp. I'm not certain that Kemp is going to be enough, because they really tore everything down to the studs, and it's going to take time for them to put things back together. Looking at the Warriors, obviously, they have Sean Kemp. They have a very good chance at picking up Gary Payton this season, pending the results of the lottery. But is rebuilding the old real-life Seattle Supersonics with Kemp and Payton going to be enough? Because looking at the rest of their roster, they really don't have much. They have a couple of older centers in Eaton and Nymphius. Wayman Tisdale is kind of an interesting case here. Wayman was given a big salary this offseason. He actually, he got a big raise from his rookie deal, but on the whole, he's on a very, very cheap contract. He's locked up through his prime, and he's kind of a weird talent. He's very offensively gifted, defensively, maybe not so much, and he's not the kind of guy that I would really love to see in the power forward spot where he started this season. He doesn't have the rebounding chops. Defensively, his post defense isn't great. He does have the potentials to grow into a good shot blocker, but that's going to take some time. And even though I think, the Warriors woefully underutilized him, which I don't know why they would do. I could see why they did it last year. They kept him to 26 minutes a game. He scored 15 points. So if you figure he went up to 35, 36 minutes a game, like starters minutes, he probably could have easily averaged 20. That's basically all he brings to the table. But on the other hand, that's all the Warriors really have is Kemp and Tisdale. And it's not like you have to this season kind of hide him and make sure that nobody realizes how good he is, because you've got him under contract for three more years. If anything, I would have thought this would have been a season where you would have seen the Warriors try to feature Tisdale a little bit to drive his trade value up, and then maybe flip him. But honestly, I don't know, unless you can flip him for a premium draft pick, that you're going to get better value for contract than you're already getting with him. As time goes on, he's going to develop a little bit more interior defense-wise, be it rebounding, post-defense, and blocks. And even if he has some holes in his game, he does a couple of things really well. He scores, and eventually he's going to be able to block shots. And there's something to be said for doing one thing well when that one thing is scoring. So I will be surprised, disappointed, maybe a little bit of both, if we don't see a bigger role for Wayman Tisdale going forward. He's not quite on Kemp's timeline. He's 25. Kemp is 20. But it's not like he's ridiculously old compared to the rest of the team. So I really think Tisdale is a guy that we should see a lot more out of next season. Kemp is going to turn into a great scorer. He was not that this year. He's still super raw. It's honestly kind of sad to see him leading the Warriors in scoring at 16 and a half points per game. Again, I think if Tisdale was given true starting minutes, he probably averages 23, 24 points a game to lead the team. But the big question for the Warriors is who else you got on the team. It's going to be their draft pick. Presumably that winds up looking like Gary Payton. Obviously, the Warriors are not guaranteed to win the lottery, and if they don't win the lottery, I think the farthest they could fall would be 4 or 5, which is still some good talent around camp, but I really think they'll be disappointed if they can't come away with back-to-back Camp Payton picks. And quite frankly, for the Warriors, the cupboard is pretty bare elsewhere. They haven't stockpiled a lot of young players, so they're going to have to build through trying to take swings in free agency. And I've seen early on in the league, the Warriors were constantly poaching players off of my roster, paying just a little bit more than I wanted to pay them, which tells me that they probably have some of the same roster sensibilities as I do. It also tells me that any guy that I like, I have to be prepared to overpay for this season because the Warriors have cap space. It's always nice when teams that don't think like you don't have cap space, because it means maybe you can find a bargain or two, but I know I'm not going to find any bargains in free agency this season because the Warriors are going to be out there throwing maxes at all the guys that I like. I do suspect if I'm the Warriors, one of the things I would really try to focus on going into this season's RFA is trying to throw max contracts at as many players that belong to Western Conference teams as possible. Just speculating here based on how the cap has jumped each of the last few seasons, it's quite possible that the Warriors might have enough room to sign 3 players to max contracts. And so that means their initial, you know, kind of fantasy day out of RFA where all the signings are there before people have a chance to match. This could look like a really scary team. I do expect them to throw big money at several of the guys at the top of the RFA draft class, and we'll do a, well, not draft class, I guess RFA class. We'll do a piece on that hopefully at some point on Chat with a Cat. But the Warriors this offseason in restricted free agency are going to drive prices up, and in unrestricted free agency, that's when I think they're really going to be dangerous. They're going to be looking to pick off players where people aren't paying attention or trying to lowball. What this means is this is not an off season to underpay, because you're not going to get the players you want. There have been seasons where money has been tight. This isn't looking like one of them. That's kind of what I see as the Warriors. I think they're probably, they're going to have a draft pick. I do like Tisdale. They've got Kemp. But really, I think you need a rotation of 7 at least quality players. So I'd say they're still probably 4 players away. They can probably get 2, maybe 3 landed in this free agent class. I don't know that they're going to get any super superstars, because we know the best of the best players generally get offered the max by their own teams, so there's not going to be an opportunity necessarily to pry them away. But this might be the most exciting offseason in Golden State since the alternate timeline Magic Johnson season. Next up, we'll look at the Utah Jazz. Utah really surprised me this season by pivoting off of Dennis Rodman. They sent him to the Lakers ahead of a big payday for him. And when I look at the Jazz, I'm a little bit concerned if I'm a Jazz fan, because all of their really prime talent is 27 or 28 years old, I guess with the exception of Willie Anderson. But he had a step back in TC last season, so he's going to be a little bit delayed in reaching his potential. He's still a little bit raw. And when you have a team where your top assets are 27, 28, they're peaking, and you finish with 23 wins, that's a problem. It means the core that you've put together, by and large, is not going to do it. You can't add to the core. You really have to reset it. And Exist did put out there that some of his players were available for trade. Not a lot of nibbles on the John Sundvolds and Otis Thorpes of the world. The next generation of players with Brian Shaw and Jaron Jackson and Rick Smits, I don't know that they move the needle. Each one of them has some significant holes in their game. Rick Smits, for example, can score the ball and has a good post-defense skill, but is surprisingly bad at defensive rebounding for a guy his size. Otis Thorpe is a pretty good rebounder, but at the same time doesn't really do much blocking shots, so he's a bit of a one-dimensional player. Hot Rod Williams, he's another one of these guys that fits the classic big man mold of can score a little bit inside, defends pretty well, rebounds decently, blocks shots, but I don't know that he gives you a whole lot else. And this season, in 23 and a half minutes, he only averaged 9 points a game. So if you flush his minutes up, let's say to 36 a game, like most starters, he's only averaging, in that case, maybe 13, 14 points a game. So he's not overwhelming offensively. And the thing I keep going back to with the Jazz is, where do the points come from? Otis Thorpe had a pretty good year last year, averaging 28, but nobody else on the team averaged more than 15 and a half. And you really need at least one and probably two guys averaging 20 points or close to it to be able to keep up in a league where teams are averaging over 120 points a game. You need more firepower, and the Jazz have not had that. And I don't know where they go to get it. Like the Warriors, the Jazz have a couple of late picks, or I guess they have two late picks. The Warriors have one to go with their own first-round pick. So in a draft class that is fairly shallow, their own pick is probably going to get them something. I don't know what those other two picks get for them. The Anthony Bowie signing is kind of an interesting one, too. I think when everybody was taking a look at free agents, they saw Anthony Bowie as a blue potential player. But the fact that he was able to sign for just $1 million a year contract tells me that people weren't really impressed by what Anthony Bowie brings to the table. And to be honest, it's a little difficult for me to see why he is considered a blue potential player. He does have an A in jump shooting, but I guess B's in perimeter defense and steal, but it's C's and D's everywhere else. His athletics are not very good. And he kind of proved that out this season. He was given a pretty good chance to showcase his wares. Going back to the point of trying to get Wayman Tisdale out there to show what he can do and maybe drive his trade value up, if anything, I think the trade value for Bowie has been driven down by a season where he averaged almost 30 minutes per game and couldn't even crack 10 points a game, came up with 3 boards per game and shot 41% from the field. So Bowie is a player that I just think maybe somebody will eventually figure out a way to get a use out of him. But as I look at him, I think he's a player that unfortunately is never going to be a major contributor. At $1 million a season, that contract isn't, an albatross around the neck, but it's not great either. On the other hand, one of the things I do like about what the Jazz have done is they have signed a lot of players on modest contracts to get a lot of depth. So they have all of the, the bench and the support system around whoever they're going to get in as a star. And I really think the Jazz are praying that John Sundvold thinks he can get more and declines his contract. Because if he declines his player option this season, the Jazz won't quite have as much as the Warriors when it comes time to go shopping, but they will easily have enough for 2 max salaries. And so, again, this is a team that you have to watch out for if you're trying to underpay your players. The Jazz are certainly a team that could swoop in and make you feel bad about that by stealing a guy away from you. And I think, much like the Warriors, the Jazz are four players away probably from really being in serious contention. I think they might be able to get one good player in the offseason. We'll see how their draft pick lands as the lotto gods look down on them. Right now, they're sitting at five, which, if anybody jumps, kind of knocks them out of the premium position. I really think, I don't want to go too deep into a draft preview, I can do that later, but I think there's a big drop between four and five, and then it drops off a cliff after five. So if the Jazz go through the lottery and they get bumped, they may need to decide, do we really want to keep this pick or do we want to try trading it? So will be interesting to see what the lottery brings in that case. The next team on the docket is the Lakers, and the Lakers last season had an absolutely abysmal training camp where the training camp gods decided to rain down fire and brimstone on their team and really set them back in a lot of ways. Now, they've done nicely pivoting. They've traded off a lot of those players. And what they have now is an aging Joe Barry Carroll holding down the fort at center. And they're a team that's exciting offensively, but defensively, you know, they give up a ton of points. And I think one of the things that would really serve the Lakers well is to start pivoting to defense. And they've done that by bringing in Dennis Rodman. So Rodman is a really curious duck to me. In that he's, you know, he reminds me honestly an awful lot of Kurt Rambis from 4 or 5 years ago, where his basic skills are rebounding, and post defense. And offensively, you know, he can get a layup. He might be able to hit a jump shot, but he's probably going to struggle to average even double digit scoring. And if you look at his stats from this season, that kind of is borne out. He averaged 24 minutes a game and 8 points. So he can probably average 12 points a game if he gets full starters minutes. Might even lead the league in rebounding. The question is, do you have enough offense around him? And I think if I'm being honest, in their current incarnation, it's quite possible that the Lakers do. I mentioned earlier they have Joe Barry Carroll, who is an offensive powerhouse at the center position. I think Detlef Schrempf could really stand to be moved down to small forward rather than power forward, simply because his post defense is not great. In fact, his post defense is only 44. It's well below average. So you probably want him not trying to bang with the big guys inside. So if you moved him down to a small forward, and then you have Xavier McDaniel, who has an 89 on the inside, then you've got three players that can really score the ball. Rod Strickland is more of a facilitator at this point in his career, with that 91 handles and only a 64 passing. So that might be a player where if I was the Lakers, I would consider, do I need to pump a little bit of points into paid training to get him to reach that potential before Joe Barry Carroll and Detlef Schrempf fall off? In Schrempf's case, I guess even more after a disastrous training camp. So the pieces are kind of there for the Lakers. But again, you know, you look at their core pieces, JBC is 31, Schrempf 27, Rodman 29, McDaniel 26. And they just finished outside the playoffs and kind of slid away. I think the Lakers would really love to make a splashy move to bring in a big-name player. They could really use some focus on their offense. They have the Spurs draft pick this year, but they don't really expect to get much help from that. That's the 23rd pick. It's not going to be much. And they don't have a lot of cap space. So I think the Lakers are going to have to find a way to swing a trade to upgrade their offense. Maybe bring in one more guard. And the other thing that I look at the Lakers and I think, you know, what could the Lakers use? It's 3-point shooting. They finished 21st in the league last season. It would not hurt them at all if they could bring in a guy that could be a knockdown spot up shooter, because Joe Barry Carroll is going to command attention inside. Detlef Schrempf, for a big guy, is not a bad passer. Joe Barry Carroll's a decent passer. Even Dennis Rodman, he doesn't do passing well, but having him crashing the boards on the inside, you figure he could crash a missed shot. If you have a three-point shooter that has an off night, maybe Dennis is getting some of those rebounds. I think maybe something more of a pure shooting guard than McDaniel. I don't know. I like Schrempf. I like McDaniel. I really think if you can turn one of those into a serviceable shooting guard, because McDaniel is playing, quite honestly, out of position as a shooting guard. He doesn't have the three-point shooting chops, doesn't have the jump shooting chops. And I think if you were to if you take a look at him, his career field goal percentage is 426. He shot 428 this season. I think he's really been miscast in whatever people have been trying to do with him. He needs to get out of the shooting guard role. He needs to move up the floor where he's shooting inside more. You take a look at his splits, and on his shooting splits, he's shooting this season almost 11 jump shots per game and just 6 inside buckets a game. And on jump shots, he's shooting 32%. On inside shots, he's shooting 66%. So you've got to move him inside. You got to move him up to the front court, get him out of jump shooting. And I think at that point, you can probably unlock his potential. If you're planning on keeping Rodman, maybe that means you move Detlef Schrempf. And the Rodman thing is really going to hamstring the Lakers in the offseason. You figure they're going to have to match him in RFA if they can't come to an agreement. But that really cuts into what they've got to work with in terms of salary. So I really think now LTS has been shown to be a guy who is able to trade, willing to trade, and can get assets when he's trading. So I think, the trade is the thing for the Lakers. That's what's going to let them take a step forward. They're going to have to find a trading partner, and they're going to have to move salaries to bring in salaries. So very curious to see what that brings. Next up is the Nuggets. They finished 38-44. The Mavericks, who finished 36-46. Nuggets are after them. So the Mavericks, honestly, the Sam Bowie era feels like something of a disappointment. They've been rolling with Sam. They've had Byron Scott. Both of them are 29. And when you're coming up with a 36-46 season, your two key players are exiting their prime. And it's not like they have guys coming into their prime. In fact, if you look at their third best player, it's probably Bernard King at 33. Looking at guys on their roster right now, they've only got two guys under the age of 26. That's Dallas Cabejas at 25 and Ladell Eccles at 23. And Eccles averaged 9 minutes a game and Cabejas averaged 21 minutes a game, but just 7 points. So neither of those guys is a star of the future. The Mavericks are a team that is unfortunately reaching the end of the line with their current core, and perhaps doubly unfortunately, that current core is pretty danged expensive. Bowie is on a max contract. Bernard King's on a max contract. Byron Scott's coming to the end of a max contract. What that means is they're not going to have a ton of room left for signing free agents after they make their draft picks. And neither of their draft picks is particularly high. They're probably hoping to find a diamond in the rough with their picks and the Cavs picks. If they can get somebody who gets a blessing from the TC gods, I think that will give them the direction that they want to go. And I know they tried pretty hard to move Byron Scott last season. I almost wonder, Bernard King is probably nearly untradeable with that contract. Byron Scott's on an expiring. Is it worth at this point looking to trade off of Sam Bowie and getting what you can get from him? But more importantly,
the reason I think he might want to look at Bowie rather than trading Byron Scott is Scott's contract comes off the books after next season. So if you trade away Sam Bowie and you don't commit any long-term money to guys in 1991, you have clean books. So you have to struggle through one more season this season, and you can maybe trade off pieces, put things in place, maybe start working to support around the young guys that you draft. But you're ready to pivot with almost clean books. And then if you can find a way maybe during the draft to attach one of those picks, either the Cavs pick or the Maps pick, to Bernard King and get him out for a salary dump, you can really go full reset. But if I'm the Mavericks, I do think it's time to consider a full reset, because your core is 29 and older. They haven't made the playoffs. You don't have cap room to bring in a ton of contracts. You don't have high draft picks to build around. They're kind of in purgatory right now. And I think this is the season where you kind of clean up your books. You position for the future. This is a lost season. If you win this season, great. If you lose this season, great. But really what they need to be focused on is how do we completely reset and pivot by the time we're at this point next season, or I guess next offseason, as they're preparing to build. So now let's go to the Nuggets, who were our 38-44 team. The Nuggets are a team that has, I really like what they've done in terms of starting their reset. They've got several good young players. They've got Clifford Robinson at 23. They've got Ronnie Cicely at 25. They've got Nick Anderson at 22. They've got Nate McMillan at 25, Gary Grant at 25. There's definitely a core of quality players that are all on the upswing there. The danger in that is trying to put TC insurance on all of those guys is going to be something that's going to be pretty costly. And so if I were the Nuggets, I would be cognizant of that, you know, just protecting McMillan, Grant, Anderson, Cicely, Robinson. You're already looking at 30 points of insurance. And if you figure they're going to, they're probably going to be looking at trying to insure their pick this season. That's now 45 points. And then next season, they have a couple more first-round picks. So it's a team that can't protect everybody and maybe shouldn't protect everybody. But what I think, if I were in their shoes, I would really be trying to do is I would really be trying to find a way to package two or three of my good assets for a great asset, preferably a young asset. And I think they have the young assets to do it. You know, so if they can do that, maybe for salary, you package up some of these young guys with Daryl Griffith. The Nuggets are poised to turn the corner, but they're not going to be able to turn the corner, I think, until they consolidate a little bit and get one really transcendent superstar that's still on the rise. Griffith this season put up numbers that were honestly a little bit disappointing for a guy making what he's making. He's been their engine for the last five seasons or so. But at this point, it's probably time to move off him. He's 31. He dropped from 25 points a game a season ago to 21 last season. He's now down to 18. And the field goal percentage is not great. He's gone from shooting 45% to now 44%. And trending, it looks like it's going down. So finding a way to get off of Griffin, even if you have to attach a couple of the young guys to that in order to turn around and get a superstar centerpiece, I think is what they're going to have to do. Of the guys that they have in-house, quite honestly, I think either Nick Anderson or Ronnie Cicely are their best bet to be that going forward. But the Nuggets, again, are kind of in that same position the Mavericks are, where they're not quite getting over the top.
The difference is the Nuggets players are all young, at least their core players other than Griffith, are all young and getting better. I do think they would like to move off of either the Griffith or the Ainge contract, just to give them a little more flexibility once they make their pick in this year's draft. They're not going to have a ton of flexibility under the cap. And so really, I think, you know, much like the Mavericks, this... So where I think the Mavericks need to pivot and find a superstar to build around and clean up their books, I don't think maybe as much book cleaning needs to be done in Denver. I think for them, it's more about consolidating around a super-duper star. They've got a ton of depth. They've got lots of youth. They need to figure out who is their centerpiece going forward. It has been Daryl Griffith. Now it needs to be somebody else, and they probably need to move off of either Griffith or Ainge or both so that they have the pieces to start extending their young core as they come up for renewals. And at some point, they're going to have to figure out which pieces they're going to keep and which pieces they're going to move. They can't keep everybody. And so we'll be curious to see where that goes. The one piece that I want to take a moment to speak about that I haven't yet on this team that I think is a very curious case is George McLeod. McLeod took a hit in training camp. He's on a fairly cheap contract, but he's a very one-dimensional player. He basically shoots threes, and that's about it. And so I'm curious to see if he gets put out on the open market, who is interested in him? Because somebody at some point is going to put together the team that that bombs threes with reckless abandon. We haven't seen it yet. I think I talked yesterday. I could see the Hawks trying to become that team. But when does three-point shooting become a thing that the teams have at a premium? I don't know. Next, we're going to look at the Rockets. After a couple of 50-win seasons, they dropped down this season to 44. And I said it before, and I'll say it again. I think I said it in one of the town halls. I really think that the thing that killed the Rockets this season was moving Larry Bird to the bench. Bird only got 13 and a half minutes this season, which... for a player of his caliber, even now, it kind of boggles my mind a little bit. You know, last season he was playing 33 minutes a game, averaging 15 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. There's no reason to think he couldn't do that again. His shooting numbers are still there. If you look at his efficiency, his PER went down slightly, but it's still 15.4. It's better than average. And, you know, I asked myself, who did they put in instead? Rod Higgins playing power forward. I mean, when I look at Rod Higgins, I see more of a shooting guard. I'm sorry. Maybe a small forward, but he's definitely not a power forward. You know, good jump shooter, good three-point shooter, mediocre everywhere else. That's a small forward. And it's not like they were... moving Higgins out of the way so they could stuff Chuck Person rather full of minutes. And I mentioned before, I think at the town hall, Kevin Edwards, I think, has been a problem on this team. Averaging 36 minutes a game, just 10 points a game, and shooting a marvelous 40%. I think it's sad, really, what could have been this season. I think if they had started Higgins at shooting guard and starting Larry Bird at power forward, I really think this is a playoff team that could have given people problems. And it's a team that, quite frankly, I hate to call you out, 78, but we need you to be more active with this team. You basically shown up and you've tried to build through the draft every year. You know, you got fortunate one year and you got Ewing. You know, Larry Bird has kind of wasted away. Rolando Blackman got re-signed to a big contract and then not really used. You need to make some trades because the fit among your pieces has not been optimal, and the team is suffering for it. And so, you know, the Rockets are kind of an example of what happens when you just kind of run a team on autopilot. You pick best player available, you extend all your guys, and you just kind of sit in, you know, playoff range, maybe slightly above, slightly below. But I don't know that I've ever felt that the Rockets are a threat to win at all. And with so many players coming off the books, they're going to have to re-sign Higgins. They would need to re-sign Bird. Michael Ray Richardson comes off the books. That's probably not a big deal. But they're already, you know, close to capped out. Once they make those signings, they're going to have no room for anybody else. And you look at their salary, it's the same story in 91, same story in 92. It's a team that's just stuck. And I think it's not healthy. It's not conducive to building a great team to have them be stuck unless you're winning 60, 70 games a season. You have the Spurs are stuck again on their salary, or the Celtics are stuck at 69 wins. That's fine. You know, you've got a proven thing, but until you have a proven thing, you don't want to get stuck, and that's where the Rockets are. And I can't really go on much more about that. I feel bad, you know, to some degree about calling 78 out, but you know, there's three ways to win, or three ways to improve your team through number one, free agency, signing somebody else's players; number two, through trades; and number three, through the draft. And so far, that we've only seen the Rockets really use one. I would love to see them use, they're not really going to be able to use free agency because their cap situation anytime soon. So I'd love to see them use trades and see if they can improve. So let's, on that depressing note, let's move on to the Kansas City Kings. This is a team that I don't worry about trying to do trades. Darth had a disappointing season, mostly due to being racked with injuries. I liked his move in the middle of the season to bring in Antoine Carr to do a Kevin McHale impersonation. I liked his move later of Antoine Carr away to get Dominique Wilkins a little bit less, simply because I think Dominique's a tremendous scorer. And maybe there was a little bit of concern about having too much big and not enough little, but I don't think... do I think Antoine Carr, Kevin McHale, and AC Green is markedly worse than Kevin McHale, AC Green, and Dominique Wilkins? I really don't. I think hanging on to Antoine Carr probably would have been fine. The big thing that Darth is going to have to do this offseason, he's going to have to pay Mark Price. And that's going to eat up all of his cap space. So the Kings don't really have a big free agency swing in them this season. And they're going to have one season in 91 where they're going to have the chance to make some moves. I would guess that they would drop the team option on McHale to let them bring in players, because once Mark Price is signed, you have the 91 offseason to make some moves. And then in 92, with Price signed and Richmond signed, and whatever moves that Darth has made, they're going to be close to capped out again. And I think the Kings are okay with that, because Darth has shown to me, and I just mentioned with 78, there's really three ways to build teams. One is free agency, one is drafting, one is trading. Darth has shown he's very, very good at trading and getting good value for players. I think he would love to have top picks. When he's had top picks, he's nailed them. Reggie Miller, I think, was a fine pick. Mitch Richmond's a fine pick. The problem is Darth is so competitive, it's hard for him to lose for very long, so he's not going to have great draft picks very often. The one thing that I think, you know, if I was grading his, you know, GM ability, he hasn't shown a great ability to work the free agent market, either to land the big fish or to work on the margins to sign players to more modest contracts and get value out of them. So we'll see if at some point that changes. If I were the Kings, I would definitely be looking to try to move off McHale this season if I possibly could. I would rather get something for him rather than try to decline that team option. And, you know, you could say the injuries were a problem this season, but, you know, injuries seem to be kind of a fluke and fairly random. You know, the other thing, you know, I can see Darth doing is trying to move off of Dominique to build a team with a timeline around the Mitch Richmond, Mark Price, AC Green core, which quite frankly is what I suspect he's going to try to do. The question is he willing to take enough of a step back in the present to set him up for the future? Because we know he loves winning in the present. I don't know. A Darth-managed team is not one I really worry about, though. When he is ready to tank for a high pick, he tanks for a high pick. When he is ready to build, he builds. And I still think Darth is one of the best coaches, as opposed to GMs, in the league. I mentioned it yesterday with talking about how he was able to coax more out of Thurl Bailey than anyone else. I would almost be hesitant to trade with Darth simply because I feel like, you know, he's able to get 150% of what I can get out of guys. So when I see a guy that's averaging 25 points a game for him, I know if I trade for him, he's immediately going to average 16. So, and that's not because Darth is cheating me. It's because Darth knows how to use his players better than I do. So, yeah, that's kind of where I sit. I think the Kings, they've shown they're not afraid to swing for the fences. Darth is willing to get very creative. He's excellent at game planning. I don't think the Kings are going to have the raw talent to catch the Spurs next season. But I think, yeah, the Kings, until Darth decides to blow it up, as long as they're running around Mitch Richmond and Mark Price, they're going to be a playoff contender, barring an injury season similar to this one, for the foreseeable future. So the Kings are in good shape. Another team that's in really good shape for the future is the Minnesota Timberwolves. And that sits mostly on the fact that they've got David Robinson, they've got Charles Barkley, they've got Tim Hardaway, they've got Reggie Lewis. They have four really outstanding players that are still on the way up and are likely to fit very well together as they did this year. And they're going to be good for the conceivable future. Right now, they've got Sidney Moncrief and Kelly Trpiuka in to add some veteran leadership. Honestly, Trpiuka surprised me this year with how well he did. You know, I thought he would get lost behind Robinson and Barkley in the front court, but for him to average 19 points a game, mostly coming off the bench, does kind of surprise me. I really like the composition of Raby's team in terms of their young core. I do think if I were in his shoes, I would be looking to flip either Moncrief or Trpiuka, maybe package with Lewis, who I think is the fourth best of their four young studs, to really, you know, solidify things and lock things down. And the reason I say package them together and trade for Lewis is Lewis is cheap this season, and then he's going to be up for an extension. And yeah, that's when you're going to have to start making some hard decisions. Not with his extension, but if you extend him, then you have to extend Barkley the year after that, and Robinson and Hardaway the year after that. So you've got to find one player that that is kind of a value contract. And right now they have four. You know, the reason they're able to spend on the rest of their team is their four key guys. You know, I guess other than Barkley, so three of their key guys are on rookie scale deals. But eventually they're going to have to get paid, and it's generally, I think, better to find value now rather than later. The thing that scares me a little bit if I'm a Minnesota fan is they don't have any draft capital to grease the skids on trades, so they probably are going to have to, if they want to substantially reset and retool, they probably have to include Lewis in any deal that happens in. But I think Lewis should be able to bring plenty of value. They should be able to get near an all-league player for a combination of Trpiuka and Lewis, or Moncrief and Lewis. So, you know, that's kind of where I see that going. I think the Timberwolves are going to be good if they just sit back and let their players develop.
kind of similar to, as I mentioned previously, in terms of the Nuggets. I would worry about if they had more draft picks coming. I would worry about becoming expensive in the TC insurance space. But this season, they might have to insure a fourth. It depends on when Barkley's birthday falls. If he turns 28 before, you know, over the summer, then they don't have to worry about him. Otherwise, they're going to have to insure Lewis, Hardaway, and Robinson for certain. But I think, you know, their cap situation is such that they might be able to bring in a player around the margins in the offseason. But this is their core. They won 50 games. Barkley may be at his peak, but everybody else is going to get better. So the Timberwolves are in really good shape going forward. The one thing that they're going to really want to focus on in the offseason is cheap depth. And that doesn't necessarily mean rookie scale deals, but what it can mean is finding a guy who's a sixth man or a seventh man, and you get him in on, you know, an MLE roughly, or maybe a little less than an MLE. And so you kind of tie down that depth that you're going to need, because as I said before, I think you generally need to run about seven players deep. Next up is the Seattle Supersonics. I think they were a little bit disappointed with the way the season ended. The Kings upset them in the playoffs. The Trailblazers caught them on the very last couple of sims to take the division title. And it's a team that is it's very good. Again, I mentioned before, if you're kind of locked in without flexibility, it can be a problem. This is not a team that is locked in with no flexibility. They brought in Moses Malone to try to help them out, but he's on an expiring deal. You know, Clyde Drexler is under contract. That's fine. He's a purple. KJ is on a rookie scale deal. That's good. They're going to have to figure out what to do with Mark Aguirre. They're going to have to figure out what to do with Danny Shays. They need to figure out what they want to do about Mike Woodson. So they have a lot of good, solid, deep pieces. But a lot of these guys are going to get paid. And so I think there's going to be considerable turnover on their roster this season. What they're really going to be in the market for is a long-term solution at center. They brought in Moses Malone to handle that this year. Moses is 35. He's not going to be effective forever. And you don't want to be on the wrong side of that happening if you're in Seattle. I think Mark Aguirre is a little less risky at the age of 30. You can probably bring him back without worrying too much about what you're going to get. I think this year was kind of a perfect storm, if you will, for the Sonics in terms of contracts. They were able to get a lot of guys on contracts that, frankly, are maybe a little undervalued for what they brought. They've still got Kevin Johnson on a rookie scale contract. He's really, alongside with Drexler, the engine that makes this thing run. The question I have is, are they going to be able to afford to bring their roster back without significant retooling? But on the other hand, I think, you know, looking at where they're going to be in terms of the salary cap, they're probably going to have about half the salary cap to play with. So the Sonics are at kind of crossroads. Are they satisfied with this season? Do they want to run back a team that won 55 games, or do they want to completely pivot and try to really make some splashy moves and bring in some quality pieces? I'm honestly not sure which direction I would recommend that they go. If you take a look at their core, Drexler, 27, Pinkney, 27, KJ, 24. So it's not like they're, even Rex Chapman, you know, 22. It's not like they're old and aging out of contention. What they are is they are what they are, and 55 wins maybe wins you the division. Maybe you need to strengthen it a little. Do you really want to blow it up after you just kind of climbed up to the mountain? But, you know, as I've said in other places, it's much easier to go from 20 wins to 40 wins. And it's harder to go from 40 to 50. It's even harder to go from 50 to 60. Every incremental step up the mountain gets harder and harder. And if the Sonics are able to add a player in free agency that gets them a step up, that's probably terrific. I don't know where they go to get that, though. Again, I think most of the great players are either restricted free agents or they're players that teams are willing to give a maximum contract to. And I will, without going too deeply into the free agent class, I will just point out, you know, for my own team, James Worthy is coming up for a free agency. He's purple. He's 29. Of course, I'm going to give him a supermax. I'd be foolish not to, because he's still got is the last year that supermax an overpay? Probably. But at least for the next three seasons, he's going to be worth it. The fourth season, he'll maybe be a little bit overpaid. But that's the going rate. I'm not ready to lose him. And I think most of the other players that are true impact players are in that boat where teams are prepared to pay the max to keep them. And so then it's a question of, can you get them to sign with you? And we started to see over the last couple of years, guys are willing to move in free agency if you offer them the max. And so maybe that's what David is counting on there. I can see the Seattle Sonics trying to run it back. I can see them trying to add a piece. If I was in his shoes, I would really be trying to drive hard after a trade that lets me take care of my center position so I don't have to worry about the vagaries of free agency. But other than that, I would probably look to run things back. I don't trust Moses Malone to keep going forever. Next up is the Trailblazers. This being my team, I'll keep it relatively quick because nobody likes to hear you talking about your own team. The Trailblazers are in a position where they have several players that have been key for them that are going into free agency. LaSalle Thompson's going to be a free agent. James Worthy's going to be a free agent. Calvin Natt's going to be a free agent. Johnny Newman will be a restricted free agent. Lester Connor is going to be a free agent. I'll just speak briefly about Lester because I don't really intend to bring him back. He kind of fell off a cliff this year in terms of production. He was a player that I found that I felt was kind of a diamond in the rough. Not the best point guard, a guy who's not going to win a game for you, but a guy who's also not going to lose a game for you. And he had kind of a blip in 1987, shooting 43% from the field. But before that, you go back to 1983, 48%, 49, 48, 49, 49 last year, and then this year, 42. And I tried a bunch of things and just I could not get him to get back to that near 50% mark. And I think that's one of the reasons that we started falling off this season. He's 30 years old. That's not likely to get better. So, I'm cutting bait with him, which is kind of disappointing. It's been a great 8-year run with him, but now I got to pivot. And I think I have two guys waiting in the wings, Michael Williams and Dana Barros. One or both of them might be able to take over and run things with him. Calvin Natt at his age, I'm not bringing him back at that number. James Worthy and LaSalle Thompson, I think I probably have to bring back Johnny Newman. I'll try to find a way to get to him in restricted free agency. I expect because he's purple potential, he gets a max. I'll match that. And so what that tells me is I'm probably over the salary cap. I'm looking to shed a little salary to drop and avoid the luxury tax at some point next season. Or maybe I just suck it up and pay it. I don't know. It'll be my first season ever in the tax if I need to go there. We'll see what happens, but the Trailblazers are in a spot where we're competing for the division title. I think I can afford to bring back most of my pieces. I've already arranged to replace Lester Connor, so we'll see how that goes. We'll see where he ends up. Probably with the Bullets. It seems like the Bullets always sign the players. It's either the Bullets or the Warriors. Everybody that I like, they sign. Finally, the Spurs. Really, what's there to say about the Spurs? They're ridiculously talented. They're locked in way over the cap this year. They're going to be over the cap next year. and they're not going to care because they're going to be favorites to win it all. They're probably picking up 30, 40 points just off wins. The one thing I will be interested to watch with the Spurs this season is what happens with Isaiah Thomas. He is an unrestricted free agent. Someone who's petty might be able to rip him off the Spurs. And if that happens, I don't know that the Spurs are prepared to replace him at point guard. The problem is he's 29 years old. He's a guy that's going to... He's not going to get better. You know, how long does he stay at this peak? Who knows? One moment. All right. Sorry about that. Those of you that were paying close attention heard my cell phone go off. And when the wife calls, you got to go and talk with her. Real quick, I want to, talk about, what Isaiah Thomas means for the Spurs. And I think if any team can afford to lose him, it's the Spurs, because they could just slide Magic Johnson down to play point guard. I mean, having Magic Johnson is such a ridiculously good backup plan for any position you might lose. And looking at the Spurs tax bill this season, I can't imagine they're anxious to start getting into that same level of repeater tax. So I do think Isaiah Thomas is one player that, if you're willing to pay a max, I don't think Easy is ready to bring him back, just because I think that tax bill, I think it's 50 or 60 points, is enough to bite him and kind of wave him off of signing up for a repeater version of that, which would run about 80 points. And at that point, it's just ridiculous. But the Spurs are in good shape. They have a bunch of players. We talked before, they're locked in, but cap wise they're not very flexible. But they were, if Jordan hadn't gotten hurt, they're probably the best team in the league. Now that he's back, I think they're probably favorites to win the title. The Spurs are going to be good. Quite frankly, I would say for the foreseeable future, except, Tom Chambers is 30, Mark West is 29, Magic is 30, Isaiah 29, Jordan 27, Mullen 26. They're not, Manning is still on his way up, but they're not going to get much better. They're already pretty much at their peaks. And you have to think at some point, West and Chambers and Magic, they start falling off, they start eroding. And at that point, does the rest of the league kind of catch up to them? I mentioned in one of my town halls, I really liked the Timberwolves matchups in the front court against the Spurs. If the Timberwolves are able to consolidate Reggie Lewis and somebody else, maybe a Moncrief, to get a real stud wing, it just struck me, maybe they should talk to the Bulls about Eddie Johnson. The Bulls, I'm sure, would love to diversify their backcourt, get a little younger with Lewis, and Johnson is an amazing offensive dynamo that could probably compete with Mullen in the head-to-head matchup. Now, I think Johnson is a free agent, so that would have to be a sign and then trade. But wow, that just came to me, and I'm like, that's not a bad... You know what I ought to do? I ought to start looking at teams and figuring out, who do I think should make a trade? What makes sense? What do I think is coming? Kind of like what we're seeing in the real-life NBA this offseason. For perspective, it's June 29th, 2026. In the last few days, we've seen Giannis Antetokounmpo traded. We've seen Ja Morant get traded. We're seeing all sorts of crazy moves all over the league. We saw LaMelo Ball go to the Timberwolves in real life. So I think this offseason in the NPBSL could be one of those seasons where teams are shuffling and trying to get ready for the future. I think teams are trying to prepare for a post-Spurs world. They're trying to prepare for a post-Celtics world.
How do you do that? I don't know. The one caveat I would have for teams as they're getting ready is the last two draft classes, the players have been super, super raw. And so I'm wondering, this is something I don't know, and it's something that I haven't spent time looking at, mostly because I haven't been curious to figure it out before now. But I'm not sure if when players are rookies, if they're I suspect since players are probably based on the historical database, their peaks are roughly the same. But how they come into league, how raw they are, I think that probably varies with some randomness. And so the last couple of classes have been super duper raw. So even if we're looking ahead, and I'll use Sean Kemp as an example, everybody's looking ahead to Sean Kemp and, oh my gosh, Sean Kemp's going to be amazing. And his potentials are amazing, but he's super duper raw. It's going to take him 6 years probably to get there. And can you wait 6 years? We kind of got spoiled in, the 80s here, where we've had a lot of guys that have come in really polished. And I think it's kind of funny because that's the way the league was in the 80s. Guys played 3-4 years in college and they came into the league polished and ready to go. As we got into the 90s and especially into the later 90s, you start getting guys jumping from high school. They're not as polished. It takes longer for them to get there. So are we entering a phase, I don't know, I haven't taken a look, where it's just random that these guys were unpolished, or are we going to see a lot of unpolished players? And I think depending on what kind of a strategy you have, whether you're rebuilding, whether you're trying to stay up top, it's worth considering, how does my plan change if players are more or less polished coming in? If I'm trying to win now and I'm relying on other teams getting unpolished players so I have 2 or 3 years before I have to worry about them, and they come in, as polished as David Robinson is for this season, does that throw a monkey wrench in my plans? Or if I'm saying I am going to pick up players in 90 and 91 and I'm going to let them grow, so in 93, once Jordan is 30, 31 years old and the Spurs are on the decline, I'll be ready to go, but it turns out those players are going to take 5 to 6 years to get there. How does that affect me? What's that going to mean for contracts? Are we going to be paying for potential, or are we going to be paying for production on these young players when they hit RFA? All fascinating things to think about, and we're not going to know it until we see it. And the last thing I want to wrap up here, but that I think is really interesting, is we're about to, after this draft, Gary Payton's going to be a rookie. When the PBSL started, Gary Payton's going to be a rookie. And I'm really interested to see how this timeline with these players diverges from that timeline with those players. And I think there are a couple of ways in which players can be different. Number one, we know that Ball So Hard like to create rookie classes and tweet when guys debuted into the league and tweet some of their potential ratings and their current ratings. So, it'll be interesting for me anyway to see the difference between the players. So just because draft classes were a certain way in the old league does not mean they're going to be that way in this league. And number two, the TC boosts, which I think are pretty random. We're going to see some players get TC boosts in this league that didn't get it in the old league and vice versa. And so you might remember a player being super, super good in the old league because he got TC boosted. And if he doesn't get the TC boost, he's not going to be nearly as good. And similarly, a guy you remember sucking might get a TC boost and be amazing. And there's one player in particular that kind of is on my mind with some of our rule changes how is this going to affect his career? And longtime PBSL heads will remember Theron Mays. Theron Mays looked amazing, had a 0 foul rating, was averaging like 5.5 fouls per game, couldn't stay on the floor for more than 20 minutes, so he sucked. Now that we put in a rule to raise the foul floor ceiling to 20, or the foul floor to 20, if he's able to stay on the floor for 30 minutes, does he become an amazing player? I don't know. If you were to draft him and throw 2 or 3 paid trainings into raising his foul rating, does he become a superstar? I don't know. So I wouldn't recommend looking at the archives of the other league to to say this is exactly what the player is going to be, but it will let you kind of see trends. And I think people that are paying attention have already been doing it. You know, everybody knew I want a tank in 84 when Jordan and Hakeem are available. I think we will see a trend toward teams identifying draft classes that they want to tank for. And because it's difficult to get the number one pick tanking when you're competing with three or four other people tanking, I wonder, you know, do we see people, and I'm going to say, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, the 2003 draft class with LeBron and Dwayne Wade, because that's far enough away that I think this podcast isn't going to have any effect on that. Would we see people starting to tank not in 2002, but in 2000 and 2001 and just selling off over and over and over to make sure they're absolutely devoid of talent to guarantee they can be in that top spot for ping pong balls? I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see because when things are unknown, I think it's a little bit different in strategy for when things are known. When things are known, people plan farther ahead. People start tanking earlier. And when things are unknown, people have a tendency to play more for the now. And again, it'll be interesting to me to see based on how currents are, even, you know, if you got LeBron James and he had A potentials everywhere but started with Fs, are you willing to wait? I don't know. You know, so that's something else to think about is, you know, what kind of a risk are you willing to take that these players are ready when you get them? And, you know, are you willing, maybe you're the kind of person that says, hey, this is my favorite player. I'm willing to wait 6, 8, 10 years for them to be good. If that's it, more power to you. Most of us are not that patient. So very interesting to watch and very interesting to see what goes on this offseason. I really think this is an offseason where we're going to see a lot of shuffling. We're starting to see luxury tax bills creep up. We're now at the point where it's very hard, other than a rookie scale deal, to find a cheap, productive player, and which was not the case early on in the league. So finances are going to get harder. And I'm looking forward to see how everybody reacts to that. So that's all I've got for now. Thanks for listening to this episode of Chat with a Cat. We'll probably do something either on the rookie draft or on the free agency class or both at some point. But that's about all I've got for this evening. Thank you and good night.